The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
At that time, Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was hungry. The tempter approached and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become loaves of bread." He said in reply, "It is written, one does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes forth from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and made him stand on the parapet of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and with their hands they will support you, lest you dash your foot against a stone." Jesus answered him, "Again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." Then the devil took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all their magnificence. And he said to him, "All these I shall give to you if you will prostrate yourself and worship me." At this, Jesus said to him, "Get away, Satan. It is written, the Lord your God shall you worship, and him alone shall you serve." Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. The Gospel of the Lord. Growing up, it was quite a rarity for us to ever go out to eat, which was perfectly fine. Mom was an amazing cook, and we had no qualms staying at home and eating her home-cooked meals. But it was always an expensive thing, always a hassle for Mom and Dad to take their five kids out on the town, you know, and have a dinner at a restaurant. And so it very rarely happened. Usually when we went, it was because there was some occasion, there was some party going on or something that we were celebrating. And I remember one specific time that we went. It was a wedding rehearsal dinner. Some of the family members were in the wedding party, and so we were invited to attend. And it was at the local country club in Batesville, which was called Cricket Ridge. It was on a golf course over there. And while we were there, you know, it's a little bit more fine dining experience. You know, it wasn't like going to McDonald's or, you know, something like that where you can just kind of show up and eat what you want. You know, you got to sit there, and then you got to order your food, and you got to wait for it to come out. And I remember being a kid, you know, and you're sitting there, you know, and there's nothing to do, you know, and Mom and Dad are busy just talking with everybody else, and you're bored to tears, and, you know, I did the only thing I could think to do, and that was to annoy my mother at that time. So I turned to her, and I was just like, "Mom, you know, what are we supposed to do? They don't even have, you know, like coloring books or crowns or anything, you know, to entertain us kids while we're waiting, you know, for our meal." And in her exasperation and annoyance at me, she said, "Well, here's a pen. Why don't you just flip your placemat over, you know, and do some drawings on the back of that? You know, entertain yourself. You know, I think you can manage that." Well, I was kind of, you know, bummed out by that. But I took the pen, you know, and I took the placemat that was there at our table and flipped it over, you know, and was expecting a blank page. What I saw instead was the backside of the placemat that was facing the table was completely covered with a bunch of words. It was a bunch of stories on the back of this placemat. And being old enough to read, I was like, "Well, you know, what else am I going to do?" You know, so I started reading this text. And I was quite shocked by what I started reading. The very first line, it said, "Before there was creation, there was God." And it went on to detail how God had, before he created the world, before he had created us, he created the angelic race. He created these powerful masters of being that were going to aid him in the creation of the rest of the cosmos. And amongst their ranks, there was one whom he named Lucifer, the greatest and most powerful of all the angels. His name literally means light bearer, the bearer of light. And he was the most powerful being in the universe next to God himself. And I remember reading that, and I'd never heard this story before. I knew about Satan. I knew about the devil. I had no idea who Lucifer was or this great angel of light, so I'm like getting excited about this, you know, and I continue reading. And it starts to detail how Lucifer and the rest of the angels were given a vision of the future, that God revealed to them his great plan for the created order. And he showed them not only the physical world and all the mountains and rivers and streams and everything that would be created, but he showed them mankind. He showed them the human race. And more than that, he showed them that he would become one of them, that he would step down from his throne and become a mere human being. And Lucifer rebelled against that idea. He rebelled against the idea because he couldn't imagine lowering himself and bowing before the weak and ignorant human beings that God was going to create, even if God became one of them. He couldn't imagine spending his life serving mankind as the rest of the angels would do. And so in his rebellion, in his pride of place as being the greatest of the angels, there was an epic combat that took place in the heavenly realm, and he took a third of the angels with him in this combat. And again, as a kid reading this, I was like, this is awesome. You know, there's battles taking place in heaven and angels fighting angels. And I mean, I thought I'd found a treasure on the back of this thing. You know, I thought this is great. So I continue reading, you know, and it details how Lucifer, you know, was gaining this force around him, and the battle was looking pretty fierce. And God, to choose his champion, the one who would oppose Lucifer in this great combat, did not turn to the greatest of the angels. He didn't turn to the third-ranked angel. He didn't turn to the seraphim or the cherubim or the thrones or the dominions or all these great powers of the angelic host. He turned to one of the lowest of the low angels, an archangel, which is very low on the totem pole. And he named him Michael. And he sent St. Michael out to cast Satan, Lucifer, out of the heavenly realm. And that name, Michael, he was named that because it means, in Hebrew, who is like unto God. And that was Michael's battle cry as he leapt into combat against Satan himself, because that was the question he posed. Who are you to oppose God? Who is like unto God? And so Lucifer was humbled in that moment, thrown out of heaven by one of the lowest of angels, him being the greatest of all the angels. And in that moment, the combat shifted. No longer would it take place in the heavenly realm, for he was cast out. But now the battles would take place in the souls of men. And so he dedicated himself to corrupt and to destroy God's greatest and most beloved being, the human race. And we see that story take place in the readings today when he tempted Adam and Eve, and humanity was destroyed. We lost the war. And for millennia after that, Satan waited, knowing the plan, knowing that there would come a day when he could get his ultimate triumph, when God himself would become man. Yes, he had caused Adam and Eve to fall, but what of it? He was after God himself. And in today's gospel, we hear that moment take place. We hear that story when Satan finally gets his chance. It's kind of an irony that Christ, when he came amongst us, he brought hope to all mankind, to all beings. And indeed, he brought hope to Satan himself. For in this moment, Satan had hoped to overthrow God himself. Now for us, we read this gospel passage and it doesn't hold the same drama and the great experience that it would otherwise hold. We know the ending. Spoiler alert, Christ makes it through okay. It doesn't have the same anxiety, the same suspense that it should. But in that moment, the stakes were high. In that moment, if Christ would have given in even once, then everything that was good and right and just in the world would have been overthrown. Everything that we held dear as being true and holy would have ceased to exist. And so I imagine in that lonely desert, when Christ went out to face Satan himself, that ancient enemy, the old serpent of centuries before, I imagine that all the hosts of angels in heaven were on the edge of their seat watching this combat take place, not knowing the outcome, not knowing what Christ was going to say in response to Satan's temptations, knowing full well that in that moment God was vulnerable. God became man, and he was subject to the same temptations, the same desires as every one of us. And so every time that Christ denied the temptation and turned back towards God the Father, the angels cheered in heaven. They were like, yes, another victory in the great battle that has been raging since the beginning of time. But every time a new temptation came, they were back on the edge of their seat wondering what was going to happen. And we see that at the end of this great combat that takes place, when Christ gains the ultimate victory by denying temptation three times, he is exhausted. He is completely beaten down by this. Why? Because he is God and man. And in his humanity, he is worn down by these temptations. He was truly tempted. It could have gone very bad very quickly, and it did not. And so we see at the end of the passage that Christ himself, God himself, as man, required the assistance of angels, that they came and ministered to him there, cheering him on, thankful that he did not make the same mistake that Adam made, that good did triumph over evil. But the battle rages on in each one of us. The temptations still come to each one of us. We still have our warfare to endure in this life. There's an old story, an old Russian folklore, that tells the story of a young boy who goes out into the forest and he finds two wolf pups. He decides he wants to raise these two wolves to be his companions. And so he feeds them and he takes care of them. He nurtures them until they're grown and strong. And as he sees them grow, he realizes that one of the wolves is there to protect him, that he will not bite the hand of the one who feeds him, that this wolf loves his master and desires to protect him from all harm. But the other wolf is a bloodthirsty, murderous monster that wants nothing more than to devour the hand who feeds him, to devour the master who has raised him. And so between these two wolves is a constant stalemate, this constant conflict between the two, the one defending the boy and the other wanting to destroy him. And the only way the boy can influence this battle is by choosing which wolf he will feed. If he feeds the bad wolf, then it grows stronger and it will gain the upper hand in the battle and the boy will be lost. But if he feeds the good wolf, then he will be defended and he will come through unscathed. I am convinced that at the moment of our birth, every single one of us was assigned by Satan himself, a demon to plague our life, to lead us astray, to cause us temptation and doubt, and to lead us into sin. And he is a cunning foe. He is the one that has seen us grow up. He knows our trials and tribulations. He knows our fears. And he will take advantage of them. And his full and sole purpose in life is to cause us misery and pain. But I am equally convinced that each one of us has been given a guardian angel, one sent by God whose sole purpose is to defend us and protect us from those wiles of the enemy. That we have been granted, as Christ was in today's Gospels, angels to aid us in the combat, to aid us along the way that we may not fall prey to these temptations and devices, but instead may come through Lent and our life unscathed. And so the choice is up to us. Which one are we going to feed? If we give in to those temptations, the more we give in to a sin, the easier it is to follow into it. We create these vices for ourselves, these habits that form in our lives that are hard to break. Oftentimes we call them addictions. We call them these things that bind us and hold us captive. But if through prayer and the practice of virtue we feed our guardian angel, then we will grow strong in that, and it is easier to do good if we practice good. The more that we give in to the light, the more that we practice those virtues of courage and fortitude and charity and love for one another, honesty, truth-giving, these great virtues that call us to be godlike, then we will be aiding our guardian angel and they will aid us on the battle. And so each one of us has that choice with every time we are tempted. Every time that we feel that desire in our hearts to turn towards evil and lust and desires of the flesh, we have an opportunity to pray to our guardian angel, to turn to the one that is with us and loves us and guides us along the way. And it may seem childish to turn towards our guardian angels, that children's prayer that we said when we were young. It may seem archaic to turn to Saint Michael himself and pray that great prayer that we have been given by the church. But I am convinced that these are the great defenders that have been given to us, and that in them we can have the victory. And so let us turn to our angels. Let us never give up in this combat. Let us never grow weary of what lies before us. And if we do so, and we feed the one that protects us, we will be victorious. Amen.